I'm trying to elevate small talk to medium talk.
Hi, I'm Alexander Chester. And I've heard so many stories about you when I joined this podcast, and I could not believe that they were all true about one human being. And now I know that everything I heard is true.
I'm Austin Enske, and I don't tell my wife anything. She thinks I'm at the office right now.
And I'm Dana Lee. And like I tell Larry in this new episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, don't be the funny guy.
Welcome back to Pretty, Pretty, Pretty Good, a Curb Your Enthusiasm podcast. We are here today to discuss Season 7, Episode 7, The Black Swan, which originally aired on November 1st, 2009. Of the following year, The Black Swan film came out and, you know, winning Oscars and everything, even inspiring a perm costume for me. So is it fair to say that Larry David and Curb basically inspired that movie?
Absolutely. I mean, if you want to talk about a guy who is just like putting his entire body and being into something for the purpose of creating art, you know, you have the dancer that Natalie Portman played in The Black Swan, and you have Larry David showing him his true self to the world for our, you know, kicks and giggles. There's nothing else like it. Yes, I think that's very much the same. There's also a book, you know, The Black Swan, Nassim Taleb wrote that book about like risk management or something that was like, you know, a big New York Times bestseller.
Also inspired by Larry David.
I even just randomly today got an email from some company called like the Black Swan Negotiating Company or something like that. I don't know what it is. I deleted it, but I was like tempted to invite them on the podcast. but anyway, that wouldn't have made sense because we already have a guest on this podcast. Of course, as you heard at the top, Dana Lee, who plays the role for the first time, first of three. And I think now we've been told four times recurring character as Mr. Takahashi. He joins us for this episode of The Black Swan of Pretty, 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 Pretty Good.
Thank you, Alex, and it's a pleasure to be here.
So as Av mentioned, this is the first time that you play Mr. Takahashi, and you'll come back in future episodes as well. But you were on an episode, The Car Salesman, 8 years earlier on Curb.
You remember that?
So that's the episode where Larry's trying to sell cars, and you're one of the people that Larry tries to sell a car to with ill success, course. So
even have a clip of that here.
Oh, maybe we should have even planned this better.
I got to tell you, because I did the Car Salesman episode, Larry didn't want to see me for Takahashi. In fact, I was I was already in, and he had a policy.
Yeah.
Never to hire an actor twice unless it's the same role. I was literally the last person he saw for Takahashi. So finally, he decided, let's bring Dana back to see how he does as Takahashi. And, you know, I got it. And I think at that time, I was probably the only actor who appeared on the show in two different characters. I think since then there has other actors playing different roles.
It's interesting that the show cared that much about it because our perception was that Larry didn't really care about that.
Yeah, he did. He did. I mean, you guys should know better than me. Has there other actors who've been on?
Well, one of the first guests that we had on this podcast, right, Av?
Yeah, Susie Nakamura played two different characters. It definitely doesn't happen a lot. But I would say like more as like a general thing is like Curb is not a show that generally cares too much about like any sort of continuity in its like world and like things that happened or didn't happen. So like I would be surprised if Larry thought that he would care that much about, you know, like not having that like double up of character. But like I'm glad it worked out because it was great to see you back as Mr. Takahashi car buyer.
Like I said, I was the very last actor he saw for Takahashi. So, I was told at that time that he didn't want to use actors twice.
Let's go back to the first time you cast, though, in 2001. So, you know, we've had guests on this show who have, you know, guested on pretty much every TV show from like the 90s and the 2000s.
Oh, my God. So have I.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but today we have somebody who, I mean, literally since the 70s, like here's just a partial list, like Beretta, Starsky and Hutch, Hawaii Five-O, the 70s version and the recent version, The Greatest American Hero, The A-Team, Police MacGyver, Story, Dynasty,
MacGyver,
Matlock, yeah. Mr. I mean, it's like incredible, like the length and breadth of your career, you know, and like TV shows. And then all the way up to the modern time, obviously, we have like Dr. Ken and the film Birds of Prey recently. But so tell all us, right. Like, how did you get cast the first time when you came on just in the car salesman episode?
It was just, you know, regular casting call. I just went in and I read with Larry. Apparently, I cracked him up, and the casting director told me, you know, you cracked Larry up, and that's very hard to do. I said, well, what does that mean? That he's, the casting director told me, well, I wouldn't be surprised if the part goes to you. Right then, I mean, right. Normally they don't tell you these things, you know? Normally you read and they right. say, thank you, now get the fuck out of here, you know?
Yeah.
You know? But no, she yeah. said...
I hear you.
Do you remember, I mean, it's 20 years ago, but do you remember what was on the car? Like, how much information were you given for that scene, for that, you know, that scene that you did with Larry?
Well, I do remember because, as you know, the show is not scripted.
Yeah.
So I came on, they just said, you know, just make it difficult for Larry. You know, whatever he says, right. you're not buying it, you know? You know, just, okay. I said, okay. Sure. You know, and that's how we did it.
Can we watch the scene for a second?
Sure.
Yeah, let's do that. All right. We're going back to 2001, I believe. For
oh, my God.
The car salesman.
Dana.
Dana. That's my middle name. Larry Dana David.
I noticed this is a GT.
Yeah.
And the brochure says there's a model called the GTS.
Yes.
Now, what is the difference between the GT and the GTS?
Okay, the GTS is guaranteed tremendous safety.
So without the S, it's just guaranteed tremendous.
All right, that's so good. So you're just there to give him a hard time.
But another staple of early Curb that the characters are often played, the actors play characters with their same name.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
So you're Dana buying the car.
Yeah. So as I see it, we have a couple options here. I would say option number one is this is Mr. Takahashi posing as a man named Dana.
Mm. Right.
In order to buy a car.
Yeah. Right?
That's my first thought.
Because listen, if the salesman knows that it's Mr. Takahashi, they're going to upsell him because, you know, they know he comes from this prestigious club. He's got deep pockets.
Maybe I am Takahashi, but I'm, you know, I down dress and tell him I'm Dana. Yeah,
right.
Just to throw him off.
It's like a Prince and the Pauper situation.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to be more relatable as a common man.
Wait, what was your option number two?
I think that's actually my only option. I think I had another one earlier. I forgot it.
Okay.
I should have written them down.
So I think we got to that. So, all right. So 8 years later, Mr. Takahashi is back. And should we jump into season 7, episode 7?
Let's do it.
Absolutely. Let's do it. So we're at a cemetery and we got Larry, we got his dad, and of course, cousin Andy's back. And they're walking through the cemetery and they're going to go see Larry's mom's grave and, you know, pay their respects. And when they get to the tombstone, they notice that there's a typo, or what we think is a typo, as it says passed away, as in P-A-S-T, instead of S with the S-E-D at the end.
Right.
And that's like... And that's like, I know. That's, you know, I did that on purpose because, like, it means the same thing. No one knows the difference. And they charge by the letter. So I saved $50 per letter. That's $100. And Larry's just, like, apoplectic about this. He's like, what are you talking about? Like, you don't, like, misspell. This is, like, our mother's tombstone. Like, and, like, you couldn't have put some, you know, superlatives like dearest mother, loving mother, you know, wonderful spouse, you know. Beloved mother of Larry, he specifically wants. And they're like, oh yeah, I mean, I guess, but you know, he wanted to save some bucks, and they put on some flowers. They stand there for a couple of seconds, and then Larry asks the obvious question: how long do we have to stay here?
Aside from like the insanity of Nat spelling it wrong to save $100, I don't understand. Like, even by the logic of, okay, Nat's trying to save money, like, you don't even have to write, like, the word pass. You just written the date in a dash or something, right? Very odd. Very illogical from Nat David here.
Yeah, not a great choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Born, so, dead, right? So the dates.
Yeah.
That's what
right.
You need.
Yes, yeah. Yes. He's like, yeah. Right. Why do you even put it in her name? Like, born, died.
Right.
Yeah. So we head over to Mr. Takahashi's golf club, and Larry's having some breakfast with his golf foursome. We got Larry, we got Andy, we got Jeff, we got the Funk Man. And he's telling them all about the tombstone. And
is,
like,
this
the
is this the first time we've seen this foursome sitting around a table like this?
Obviously. Like, we've never seen Andy and Marty Funkhauser together. Like, yeah. For sure not.
But it's the first. I mean, obviously. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
if I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
But. Yeah. I mean, obviously, yeah. Andy not usually involved. But the idea of the four of them sitting around a table at the country club will become a very common staple over the next few seasons.
Yeah. But, like, yeah, as it's presented to us now. This
yeah,
does,
with this,
this
exact
doesn't,
foursome.
This is not a natural group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a natural group. Really?
Well, because Andy is, you know, usually
not yet at this point. Yeah, Andy's right. and Funkhauser has only, like, recently started to be on, like, here and there. He hasn't become as regular yet. And I think, like, season 8 is
right,
when he
right,
and
right,
season 9
right.
He'll really jump up a ton. So, like, he's around, but he's not, like, in every where he's like, it's like him, Larry, and Jeff all the time.
Yeah,
that'll come
and
later.
Leah, and then Leon, of course, will be off the fourth off. And
right, yeah, Leon is the wild card. Yeah, they're like the that's the new core four.
Yeah.
Speaking of Funkhauser, Bob Einstein.
Yeah.
Can I tell you guys a little story?
Sure. That's why
absolutely.
You're here.
You know, he was a producer at one time. In fact, one of my first gig was I was on the thing. He was the producer of. I did a show with Pat Morita. We did a little sketch with the Lola Falana show. It was the Lola Falana show. Okay, and I did a sketch with Pat Morita, and Bob Einstein was the producer of it.
Oh, this
director.
Is 1975. I'm looking, 1976.
I can't believe it.
Yep, the Lola Falana show, Queen of Las Vegas.
The Lola Falana show, yeah.
Bob. There you go. So you guys go way back.
I knew him back then.
Yeah, wow.
And then Funkhauser's like, I mean, you're lucky that he didn't go even shorter and write Beloved Moth instead of Beloved Mother. I mean, that could have saved him another $100.
Yeah.
And who do we see is here? It's, if you recall, Norm. Was
back
one
from
of the
producers.
Guys who used to hang out. Yeah, he hung out with Mel Brooks all the time.
Yeah.
He's like the one of the guys that, like, was just, I think, skeptical of Larry. And his foursome are sitting down for dinner, for breakfast around the same time. And everyone's like, hey, we should really eat fast because Norm is, like, a super slow golfer. And, like, if we get stuck behind him, it's going to be the worst day. So the waiter comes over to get their orders. And everyone's like, does something, like, really simple. It's like eggs, whites, and lox. It's like just some fruit. And Andy steps up to the plate and says, you know, he wants his egg whites and lox. And he wants it with onions. And the onions can't be limp. They need to be really crispy. That's how he likes them. Well done. And Larry's like, what the hell? We're in a rush. Like, you're going to cause us to be late. You saw what everyone else ordered. But like, no, Andy's just he's very particular about what he wants to have for breakfast. He has no, you know, there's no choice here.
Now, I have a question about this club. You know, we know that Larry and Jeff had got kicked out of their original club because of the golf club incident. And then Larry had tried to get into the very, very Gentile club. Mr. Takahashi's club seems, you know, pretty open. I mean, we got four Jews at this table. We have, you know, an Asian American, at least one that we know of. We have Norm, who I think is also Jewish, actually. So this is not the super waspy, right wing club that Larry was last trying to get into. So so why don't you tell us, Dana, what kind of club is Mr. Takahashi running here?
Well, the way I say it, I mean, as an Asian American, I think it would be pretty, pretty, pretty hypocritical if I were to not allow Jews or Blacks or any other minority group to be in the member of the club, you know?
I mean, this seems like a much more interesting
club. He's a wonderful man who runs a very nice club.
Yeah.
Yes.
As long as you respect his swan.
Everyone's allowed it.
Yeah. even maybe
as
some
as long as they pay their dues.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Contrary to what people think, I don't really hate Larry, you know? No, people get the impression that, you know, no, I love Larry. I want him to be there. I just don't like his antics. and what he does at the club, you know?
That sounds like something.
You know he's up to no good.
Yeah. That sounds like something parents say sometimes. Yeah. I love you. I just hate your behavior.
Exactly.
Yeah. So first, this guy comes over, and he's named Jim, and like him and Larry make quick chit chat. But Funkhauser's like, why didn't you introduce us? What the heck? That's what polite people do. And Larry's like, no, like you don't need to know him. He's from New York. You're never gonna come across him.
Well, so who is Jim? You know, and what's with his hair? Also,
we don't know anything about Jim.
Yeah. Who comes from LA into New York just for the day and then is just like hanging out in like a country club dining room?
Well, if I got invited to Mr. Takahashi's,
I guess that's
room,
true. It's worth driving.
I would probably fly out to LA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So we don't know anything about Jim.
Great club.
Who's right in the Funkman LD argument here about introductions, in your opinion?
Dana,
who do you think is correct in this argument between Marty and Larry here?
Don't get me involved. Okay. No. I mean, I have to say Larry, of course.
Oh, so you are on Team Larry. What about you?
Yeah, I'm on Team Larry also. You don't have to like introduce the whole table to like this random guy who like you don't need to know this guy. Like I'm trying to like get the in and out of this quickly. Like I do that all the time. Like if I have someone over for the weekend and like I'll be like in synagogue and people will say like, oh, I'll be like, oh hi, this is so and so. You don't need to know him. Like he's like he just for the weekend. You're never gonna see him again.
Don't invest the time.
Yeah, like you don't need to know him. Fine.
Although, of course, in this episode, it'll come back to bite Larry.
Yeah. He will be hoisted his own petard.
Mm. What is a petard?
Okay, so we are going to get into our first clip. And this is Larry receiving
clip.
A phone call. Our second clip. Yes, our first clip of the Black Swan. So this is, so Larry is still at the table and his phone is going to ring in the dining room.
Hello. Oh, hey, Dad. I can't talk here. I'm in the dining room.
You shouldn't use the phone in here.
Come for dinner tonight at 6:30.
Hey, come on, keep it down.
Yeah.
Come on.
And
tell me to call him back.
Oh, great, I'll see you then.
Oh. No cell phone in dining room. Club rule. Why you break a rule?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Takahashi. My father had a quadruple bypass surgery yesterday, and he needed to hear my voice.
You do this all the time. That's the warning.
Sorry.
They're guilt by association.
Who the hell is?
It's Takahashi.
He's the owner
of the club?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't want to be guilted by association, then don't hang out with Larry David.
Exactly.
I mean, that's a pretty good way to avoid that problem.
That goes for all of you. That's, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so far I've done a good job of never getting involved with Larry David, other than watching his show relentlessly. So yeah, so we flash ahead a few minutes and we see the rest of the group is like they're done eating, they're just watching Andy eat, like they're all sighing as he takes every little bite. And finally, the Funk Man he interjects and he tells Andy to finish shoveling that shit into your face. It's to no avail, however, because Norm's party has gotten up and they're heading out to the golf course. And no, not the ranges; they're going to the golf course. So the bill comes and Larry picks it up. You know, he's the man with the money at the table. But you know, he doesn't do so without complaining about this restaurant's tipping regime that has been installed, which provides for a mandatory 18% tip, which is included, but also includes a space for an additional tip. And Larry thinks this is completely ridiculous. Like now I have to start doing math to figure out if I want to do 2%, 7%. You know, I'm not leaving any additional tip out of protest of the system. He's a third party voter, right? Like he's saying like, nope, not doing it. So yeah. So, you know, they're heading out and the waiter comes over and is like, oh, excuse me, sir. Was like everything okay? I noticed you didn't leave me a tip. Which, fuck you. First of all, you got a tip. Like, you know, you could say there was no,
I mean, Larry David's worth $40 million.
Yeah.
I'm on the side of the waiter.
Yeah,
here.
But still, well, no, he shouldn't say you didn't leave me a tip. Like, you did get a tip.
Well, I think the accepted standard in the club, obviously, is that you add a tip on top of the 18%.
Yeah, and like the whole thing with Larry, where like now he has to do math. Like, you had to do math anyway.
Yeah.
You're just doing math off of a different number.
It's actually an easier percentage, right? 18 is a harder number to calculate than 2 or 5 or 10 or whatever single digit.
Yeah, 2 or 5, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very easy to do, right. They give you the new number on the bill.
Yeah.
Presumably.
Yeah.
All this could have been, of course, you know, if they take my suggestion, we wouldn't have this problem, which is to just put on a service charge.
Well, you're the owner of the club. You got to start
setting
these rules.
I know.
I'm the owner of the dining staff.
If I did that,
they're not putting your ideas into practice.
I think the dream of owning your own golf course is that you can insert your own tipping requirements in the dining hall. That's the main part of owning a golf club, of course.
Right. But I'm saying the problem could have been solved if we don't just suggest 18% and just write in service charge, 18%, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, don't even call it tip. Let me ask you, I'm not a golfer, but I have played putt-putt in my day. And if you can't play through, can't you just skip the hole and come back to it at the end? Like, all right, Norm is stuck on hole number two, so we're going to go from one to three, and then we'll come back to two at the end.
Yeah, I don't think you do that on like a professional golf course, like on a nice country club golf course.
I mean, in putt-putt, you can lose your ball on the 18th hole because it doesn't come back, you know? I don't think that happens.
you can play through somebody. Yeah. Somebody can wave you through, but
they,
I don't think you can skip
right. They have hole. To let you. That's the etiquette.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't think you can skip a hole. I don't think
this lack of etiquette is why I'm not a golfer, I guess.
But I mean, the thing is that once you're out there, you can do what, as long as your group, you know, can decide, hey, let's not play this hole. I mean, why not?
Yeah.
You know? Right. Yeah.
It's better than hanging behind Norm for 4 hours.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, but I bet there's a lot of golfers that would be like very particular about not playing the 18 holes, and then like their score doesn't matter.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm not a golfer.
Yeah,
I'm sure. Listen, if you pay a ton of money to join this club, you can play every hole that you can.
What are the annual fees at Mr. Takahashi's club?
I figure it's like since it's Larry is a member, you know, it can't be that high, right?
He is
probably
cheap,
but
he is rich.
But $20,000 a year.
That's not.
Yeah, he's rich, but he's also doesn't like to spend his money.
Yeah, he's the parsimonious type.
Yeah, not as expensive as Mar-a-Lago, that's for sure. It's probably $20,000 a year membership.
Yeah, at Mr. Takahashi's club, you get to like be like bump elbows with like a really like powerful, impressive person.
Yeah, at Mar-a-Lago, you have to bump elbows with some other guy.
So, yeah, so basically, yeah, Larry's like, I'm protesting math, not doing the additional tip. So, yeah, so we head out to the course, and indeed, we're stuck behind Norm, and he's moving at a snail's pace. So they Larry and Norm just basically get into this huge screaming match about Larry, yelling at him because they're going too slow. And I guess this is now like several days later. It feels like they shoot it as like now they're meeting in the locker room after playing golf that day. But like, obviously this is sometime later because turns out Norm has died. And this friend of Norm is like blaming Larry because he's like, he had high blood pressure. And you know what happens to someone who has high blood pressure when they get into a screaming match is they get a heart attack and they die. And that happens to Norm and it's your fault.
Yeah. Now, obviously, like the story is being told this way for like comedic effect. But this guy's the worst storyteller of all time. Like, he starts the conversation with "you can't yell at Norm" and ends it with "oh, and by the way, Norm's dead."
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's a burying the lead.
Yeah, a very strange.
I'm very upset at you about yelling at him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, as you said in your opening line, I've heard all these stories about you and I never believed them, but now I do. I know they all must be true because you're the worst and all the stories I hear about you must be true. And Larry doesn't seem to care that Norm is dead. He's like, wait, what have you been hearing about me? Tell me what you've heard. He just that's all he cares about is the gossip.
Well, Norm was an asshole.
Yeah, he's a prick, as Larry said. he played slowly. Jeff's like, you know, actually, Larry, you have gained quite a reputation at this club. And Fuck is like, you know, it may have been an accident, but you killed him. You're a murderer. And Jeff's like, well, you know, it's probably more like involuntary manslaughter because he didn't mean to kill him. And Larry's like, I didn't kill him. What are you talking about? And he's like, I'm not pointing fingers, but you killed him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and but Larry's like, well, you know, you put a gun to his head the minute you ordered those crispy onions. Like, none of this would have happened.
Yeah.
You could have ordered a normal breakfast. Mm. And Jeff agrees, you know, yes, you're right. Not for Andy ordering the onions. Larry would not currently be guilty of involuntary manslaughter. The main takeaway is tomorrow we should play earlier so we don't have this problem. That's the main takeaway of Norm dying.
Yeah, so I think, Av, I'm going to propose that it actually is after the round of golf. And Norm died that quickly.
You think so?
Yeah, that's my theory.
Like, he's dead? Like,
yeah, he had a heart attack. He died. And this is a couple hours later.
Yeah, yes, right. I guess like it could have been like it happened out like died.
I mean, either way, it's absurd. But if it was days later, they probably wouldn't have heard that, you know, at the club, they would have got a phone call also, you know. They wouldn't find out post the next round of golf.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It's just like, yeah, I guess that's very fast for like him to be like confirmed dead. I guess if you're dead, you're dead. Yeah. Like they would like call an ambulance, right? Like you wouldn't.
No, not necessary. He's very dead.
He's very dead from a heart attack. Okay. Yeah, so we're at Larry's house, I guess, later that night, and Larry's having dinner with his dad and his cousin Andy and Andy's wife, Cassie, played by Lisa Arch. And she's like, hey, what's going on with that sign? And Larry's like, oh, we're doing the read-through next week. Actually, Larry, Officer Krupke is next week. The table read is in 2 weeks. So, you know, just get your weeks right. And Cassie's like, oh, hey, that stonemason called. He's going to call back. And I actually sold him a hat while I was speaking to him. Yeah, these hats and, you know, trying to make some extra money on the side. And her and Andy are going on about how, you know, life is so expensive with kids and doctor bills and college. And Larry cuts them off and makes an amazing offer. Hey, I'll pay for your daughter Skylar's college. And they're like, oh, my God, that's amazing, Larry. That's great. Thank you so much.
Shocking generosity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also just like kind of appropriate where it's like, yeah, your cousin is like really struggling. You have $400 million. Like,
yeah.
Maybe you don't have to, doesn't have to be college, but like, yeah, you should help him out if he's like, if you love your cousin and you can help him and he's struggling.
But knowing Larry,
money.
But knowing Larry, there's got to be a catch.
Yeah. And yeah, Andy does seem a little tough to love.
Yeah.
I got to say.
Yeah.
As cousins go.
Yeah. It must be real love.
By the way, I want to get ahead of Jared Jerome's email that I'm sure is going to come later in this episode. Andy pushing the hats on Larry is like in Seinfeld with the puffy shirt that the low talker and Kramer are pushing on Jerry before he goes on the Today Show, right?
Yes.
Andy's like, you can give it to Seinfeld. You can give it to Jeter.
Yeah. I wrote down Jerry saying, I don't want to be a pirate. Like, yeah. Wearing that hat.
Uh-huh. I love how Andy's wife thinks that Larry's having conversations with Derek Jeter that revolve around these hats.
Yeah.
Have Derek Jeter and Larry David ever met in real life? What's your prediction?
Yes. Larry David is a Yankee fan. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
For sure.
Fair. Yeah.
First of all, he was on an episode of Seinfeld while Larry was working on the show, right?
Well, that was season 6, though, right? Was Larry? Yeah, Larry's still there. Or he leaves after that season, I think.
Yeah, I think he was still there.
Yeah,
I don't know. So that's one. And number two, yes, he's a big Yankee fan in real life, right?
Mm. Yeah. All right, that's fair.
And he has unlimited money, so like, yeah,
he's probably I'm sure he's my Derek Jeter. Yeah.
So yeah, so the stonemason, you know, as he's asking him to update the stone from past to past. He overhears them talking about Jeter and decides to interject his opinion on Derek Jr., which is that guy sucks.
Yeah.
He's the most overrated player.
Yeah.
He's the worst. And now here's where I heard him say offensive.
Controversy. Yeah. Okay.
And the transcript says offensive.
Okay.
And the subtitle said offensive, which is mm-hmm. probably the same thing. Mm-hmm. But yet other people heard defensive. Mm. Yes. And the only thing that makes sense is defensive.
Yes. So I heard worst defensive shortstop in baseball statistically, which is correct. But as you said, the captions say worst offensive shortstop in baseball statistically, which is very much not correct.
Right.
So the stonemason is correct in his larger goal, which is that Jeter sucks and is overrated. But is he correct on the macro level? Is he also correct on the micro level? Or is he like egregiously wrong with his supporting details? Because to say Jeter sucks because of his offense is very much wrong.
Yeah, I mean, if he was bad at offense, then he was just like not a good player at all. Yeah. Shouldn't have been in the lineup ever.
Yeah, but he was very good at offense. So what do you think the stonemason? Again, forgetting about what the transcript says, what did you hear? Did you hear defense or offense?
I heard offense, but that's probably because I was watching with subtitles and they said offense, and now it's like that's how I hear it. It's probably like now like a Laurel and Yanni situation.
Mm, yeah, okay.
They should put that on. We should do one of those. We should like poll the population, see here who hears offense or who hears like everyone be like, oh, I'm an offense person. No, I'm a defense person. I hear defensive on that clip from Pretty Good.
Yeah.
yeah. So yeah, so Larry's like, no, he's a great crutch player, and you know, everyone loves him, and just handle the stone, okay? We don't need to argue about Derek Jeter.
Yeah.
We're back at the golf course, and the turns out the course is very empty today because many people have decided to take the day off out of respect to Norm. Not our heroes, however. They are playing the very hole where Norm had his heart attack.
Yes.
That's their respect to Norm. And Larry tees off, and he hits one in the pond, and when he goes to retrieve a ball, he glances and sees what is a black swan coming towards him. Ever yet more aggressively, until eventually it takes flight and comes at him, leaving Larry in his mind with no choice but to swing his golf club and kill the black swan.
Yeah. Now, Av, a listener just shared a news clip with us this week that this actually happened. A golfer was attacked by a swan, although I think it was a white, more traditional, generic white swan, right, at a golf club, and defended, yes. And the golfer defended himself with his club, similar to Larry David here.
Yeah, I mean, what else are you going to do? Like, it's survival of the fittest. It's either you or the swan.
Well, that article is written from a very pro-human perspective, and I think it's very anti-swan.
So. Anti-swan, huh?
Yeah.
No, but you know what? It is true that swans can get very, very aggressive at times. I mean, they look pretty, you know, especially in the water, but I heard that swans can actually get pretty aggressive if they want to.
Now, if only Mr. Takahashi was as understanding as Dana is on this issue. Now, Av, here's my question.
So this is,
We're going to, you know, once they go back into the dining room, they're going to suddenly notice that the entire club's iconography is built around the swan, like it's on everything. So I'm wondering, like, how long does a swan live? In other words, is this swan Mr. Takahashi's original black swan, or have there been other black swans before this one?
I mean, this is the love of his life. So I don't I don't think this is like a retread. This is the black swan.
No, this is the one and only Keiko.
The one and only Keiko.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah. There's no other. Now his love would be frivolous. Then
it does say, you know what? In a protective environment, a swan can reach 30 years. So yeah, this could be. So Keiko could be. Keiko could have been with him for most of his life.
He was so young. So like they want to call animal control, but Larry's like, no, we'll get kicked out of the club if they find out that I killed his swan, rightfully so. And like he's like, everyone, you can't tell anyone, not including your wife. And Andy's like, well, you know, me and Cassie, like we have this pact that we always tell each other everything. I feel like Chester, you have this pact with your wife, right?
But I don't bring it up in the context of my friend just having murdered a swan.
Right.
Like you don't affirmatively like if my wife said, hey, did Larry kill a swan at the golf club today? All right. Maybe in that case, I would fess up, but I wouldn't. You don't have to go affirmatively share that information if it's not relevant to her.
Yeah, you don't have to. I agree.
Especially if Cassie has as big a mouth as apparently she does.
Yeah. So this sets off in a way. I don't think I've ever seen Jeff this angry on the show to date. And he's like, are you crazy? Yeah, he was pretty upset then. Yeah. But I think he's like more just like this. Like he feels like Andy just said like the dumbest thing he's ever heard in his entire life.
Yeah. The only time I tell my wife that I'm is when I'm with another woman. So Jeff is still cheating on Susie apparently, a lot.
So it seems.
Yeah.
Or he very rarely tells her that he's playing golf. So that's hard to cover. You're playing. He seems to be playing a lot of golf. Some of the times he must be really playing golf, and some of the times he's with another woman.
Yeah.
But Larry's like not having it. Larry's like a mafia boss here. He's like, we're a foursome. We stick together. No wives. And they take the swan and they go bury it.
Yeah.
Funkman is like talking loudly about the black swan. And like Larry's like getting pissed off. He's like, what are you doing? Like, don't talk about it. Like, we stay here for as long as we need. Swan killers leave. They run away. People who didn't do anything wrong, they hang out. They have lunch. They have a good time. They socialize.
Yeah.
They don't talk loudly about murdering black swans.
I'm reading my notes from the episode. And I wrote down the quote. Let me explain something to you, moron. Swan killers leave. And then I wrote in all caps with multiple exclamation points, we need to include this clip. But I forgot to mention that to you before we started recording. So I guess we don't have that clip.
Oh, I have.
Oh, you do have that clip.
No, I don't have.
And then, Larry saying,
right afterwards.
You're talking way too loudly about swan killing in the dining room. This whole scene absolutely kills me. The way that Larry looks menacingly at Marty with his knife and like how terrified Funkman is of Larry there.
Yeah. But like, yeah, and then Funk is just like, you don't follow any rules. You have your phone out of the dining room and you kill the swan. Like, those are the two rules that you broke. No killing swans and no having your phone out of the dining room.
Listen, Mr. Takahashi doesn't have many rules in his club, but that's two of them.
Right.
Yes. And then it looks like we will have some people that have located the swan in question. And we have, our guys back having lunch in the dining room, watching the scene from above.
Look.
Mr. Takahashi looking at the dead swan, very saddened.
That's true pain.
Broke my heart.
The caption says here that he was barking orders.
Now what are we gonna do?
It was a bird. What were you so scared of? A bird.
It was self-defense.
What could it have possibly done to you?
You could kill me.
It's not a wild boar.
If you should sit with lips in the air.
You wouldn't.
Don't you absolutely.
Why
did
you tell him? Why
are
we even burying? Why were you thinking of burying?
What are you talking to?
Mr. Takahashi would like to see you all in his office now.
I love the music here.
Very ominous. So,
you know what this is? This is tea sheet. It tells me who prayed and who did not pray. Only one other group prayed. Coarse, not crowded. Respect for norm. Oh, you prayed. Why? You don't respect the norm?
No, of course I respect norm, absolutely. Yeah.
Although he was a slow player.
What else? You are not of respect. Beautiful black swan?
Black swan.
My beautiful black swan, Kyoko, was killed, murdered. Who killed Kyoko? You. I don't know you. Who are you?
I'm a guest here, and if I may say, I think the food here is just great. I ordered some eggs with onion just...
You killed Swan?
No, I'm from out of town. I have no reason to kill this one.
You. You smart guy.
Yeah.
You no kill Swan.
Oh, no, sir.
But you know who killed Swan.
Well, I don't think I do know.
You like a club?
I love this club.
You tell me. Free dues. No more dues.
For life.
Whole life.
It's a lot of money.
Valet parking.
Anytime.
Range balls.
All you want. Tell me. Right? Tell me.
No, I really can't think of who could have done it.
You. You kill a swan?
No, I never kill a swan.
Why? You stupid?
Not stupid.
Yes, you marry Big Mouth wife.
She does have a big mouth. Yes. That is true.
I talked to her.
No, you don't call her. I don't even bring her around anymore. Out of respect.
Out of respect.
Dang. How are you?
Good.
Yeah. You kill Kyoko.
Talk now. I'll call you back.
No servo in the clubhouse. Last warning. Now go. Go.
What a scene. I love that scene.
That might be the best scene in the show's history. I'm serious. That scene is first of all, like Funkman's negotiation with Takahashi, incredible. Yeah. Takahashi tells Jeff he's stupid for marrying a big mouth wife. Incredible. It's amazing. So tell us about that scene. What was on the page and what were you told there and what was just, coming up with, in the room?
Well, Larry told me he got this idea that he wants to recreate a scene from The Bridge on the River Kwai. You know, where Sessue Hayakawa's character going down the line interrogating the prisoners. So he said, can we try to recreate that? And I said, sure, yeah, you know, and interrogating. And we tried it different ways. And then, you know, the way that show works, even though they have an idea what the scene's about, is all improv, you know? So you do it once and Larry would say, oh, that's a great, let's keep that, you know, and let's do it again, but remember to keep that in. And the other stuff, nah, let's not go that way. And so did it a few times and, you know, that's what came up.
Av, you've gone back and seen just about every Best Picture winner ever. So I assume you've seen Bridge on the River Kwai.
I have not yet. It's still on my list. Still on my list. I know it's supposed to be great. I'm going to see it. I will get to it.
Especially now that you connected to the scene from Curb.
Right. Yeah. No, now I'm going to have to watch it and look back to the scene. It's, you know, I'm up to 1966, I think.
So you still have another 9 years or so, I think. All right.
Are you going back?
Yeah. I don't always do it.
You're going backwards, right?
Going backwards.
Because it's way before 1966.
Yeah, I think it's 1957, I remember correctly.
Yeah, somewhere around the 57, 56. Yeah.
Now, let me ask you another question, Dana. Mm-hmm. Larry's eye stare that he does with people becomes more and more famous over the course of the show. Here is the only time, or at least the only time so far through, season 7, episode 7, where the other person initiates it. You initiate the eye stare on Larry.
Right.
So was this something that you were sort of planning on doing, or just sort of, you know, came about again, like, while you guys were improving the scene?
It came about, I think Larry suggested it, saying, you know, that I think, I said, yeah, says that. Why don't you, start it? I said, okay.
That's a big honor.
Yeah.
So do you think that Mr. Takahashi separately, this is like his move too, or Larry once did this to him and now he's like preempting, he's using it against Larry?
That's a good call.
I'm preempting it. You know.
Yeah, you're like, I'm gonna play your own move on you. That's how much power I have over you.
Yeah, but like, you know,
it's a strong flex.
In reality, I mean, do I really know that he does that, you know?
Now we've only seen it on the show.
You might have gotten into an altercation.
Yeah, I'm going to see his show, right?
We've seen it on the show 9 times so far.
But like Larry is a big troublemaker in the club.
Right.
So you probably had to like have, discipline with before. And he's probably done times, that on you. So you know all his tricks. You know all his tricks. They don't work on you.
Yeah, I know.
That Larry David. Always mischief. So we move on to the next day.
You know what? Can I digress a little bit here?
Sure, absolutely. Please do.
Since we're talking about on the Bridge on the River Kwai and Sessue Hayakawa, I just want to say one thing, that Sessue Hayakawa, back in the 20s, he was probably the second highest grossing actor in America.
Wow.
Behind Charlie Chaplin. Yep. So a lot of people don't know this during the silent film days. And when the talkies came in, of course, his English wasn't very good. So he lost favor and moved back to Japan.
Oh, wow.
And when Bridge on the River Kwai came along, they sought him out and brought him back in. And that's what happened. A lot of people don't realize that he was a second highest grossing actor in America at one time in the 20s.
Yeah, that is incredible.
Yep.
Interesting. And then he comes back, three plus decades later.
And all this talk about Asian American actors getting a lot of work now, but still nobody has matched that, what he did in the 20s to be
the second box office draw
in America. Yep.
Yeah, wow.
Let me ask you, you brought this up, yep. You know, one of the criticisms, more of Seinfeld than of Curb, but a little bit of Curb as well, is sort of like the trope or stereotypical way that sometimes Asian Americans are represented on the show. And I'm just wondering, like, is that something that, you know, that you felt about Seinfeld or Curb or not personally?
Well, I have a different take on all about stereotypes and stuff. Okay, since I'm a product of of immigrants, my parents, and I just think that, you know, for what it's worth, I will play any character that's, to me, as long as I think it's a full-fledged character. An accent, to me, is not a big deal. You can have, as long as the character is a full-fledged individual, a human being. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Can you really say Takashi is a stereotype? I don't know, you know? I thought about that, but...
Oh, no, I don't think he is. But yeah, there are other examples in the show. But yeah, he's like, I mean, he's the one who's, you know, the much more mature and rounded person compared to Larry in their interaction.
Exactly. I don't know who maybe in Seinfeld, but in Seinfeld, first of all, I'm not so sure there were that many minority actors on Seinfeld.
Yeah, well, that was another
certainly.
One.
Yeah. On Curb Your Enthusiasm, there's quite a few.
It's much more diverse than Seinfeld, for sure. No. Yeah. Well, people are learning, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go back to Larry's going home to have dinner with Andy and his wife, right?
Yeah. So, well, first, Larry is talking to Andy and talking about, you know, we have a memorial for today for Norm and then a funeral tomorrow. 2 days with this guy in a row. It's even worse than golfing behind him. And Andy's like, yeah. So, you know, again, thanks so much about yesterday, about, you know, how you're offering to pay for the college. You know, we were wondering, would you also be willing to play for Cass Cosmetology School? Because, you know, she would be a natural for it. She really wants to go. We just don't have money. It's her passion. It's her dream. And Larry's like, what the hell? Like, I give you this amazing gift that I'm like, I say I'll pay for your daughter to go to college. And you're like, oh, what else do I have? Like, you want another thing? What the hell? Like, no, that's BS. And Cassie barges in. She's like, what? You're saying no? He's like, yeah, no. And she's like, you know, we think it's really nice that, like, you're paying for Cassie, but, like, we don't even know if she's going to go to college. Maybe she's going to be a drug addict instead of going to college. Yeah. I mean, a lot of drug addicts go to college. Like, you know, why not both?
A lot of college kids are drug addicts.
She might be.
Yeah, a lot of people don't become drug addicts until they go to college. Yeah.
Like, until they go to college.
Where will they become drug addicts if not college? Like, what are we doing here? Like, you want them to be a drug addict, you send them to college. So, yeah, so Larry's like, he's like, besides himself, he's like, what's wrong with you people who act this way? And Cassie's like, you know what type of people we're not? We're not the type of people that kill swans.
Ooh.
And Larry's just like, come on, man. Like, looking at Andy, like, what did you do? Like, he's like, oh, well, you know, we were just talking. And so, like, I had to tell her.
Yeah.
And because, you know, as you know, because we were talking. And Larry's just like, you guys better not tell anyone. And Cassie's like, what, is that a threat? And Larry's like, yes. If you tell anyone, I'll open that closet door and take every one of those hats and destroy them. The blue hat, the orange hat, the one with the cockle shells, the one with the feathers, and let's not forget the red one you're making for that asshole stonemason.
And the stonemason. Yeah, so this relationship has really fallen apart very quickly.
Yeah, very far downhill. All Larry did was offer them free college for their daughter.
Yeah.
And now they are his sworn enemy.
Yeah, Cassie's pretty awful.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no defense here, right? Like, we're not going to mount a defense for Cassie or for Andy for the moment. Yeah, I mean, I feel bad for Andy. Like, he probably would never think to ask this, and, like, his wife is just, like, has bullied him into doing so. That's
Andy's a complete bully victim here.
Much like the onions, he doesn't like. He's limp, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
So... It's the memorial service, and Larry comes in and he's talking to Funkhauser, and Funkhauser is like feeling really emotional. You know, he just lost his father. I guess he lost his mother some time ago as well. And Larry's, you know, as talking about the headmason, he's like reminiscing about them. And like Larry's like, yeah, well, you know, that stonemason, by the way, is a huge jerk. He bought it into my conversation about Derek Jeter and has all these like terrible takes about Jeter. So like, I hate that guy. And it turns out the guy standing next to them is the stonemason. And he's there because I still don't really understand why he's there, but he's there because I did Funkhauser's mom's stone, his dad's, and I'm doing Norm's, and hopefully I'll be doing yours too soon, you prick.
Yeah. And Larry, of course, is hoisted on his own petard when it comes to the non-introduction.
Yeah. I like when Lowry gets hoisted on his own petard. That's kind of the whole premise of the show.
Yes. That's true.
Yeah, not always quite so elegantly as this, but that's kind of what the show tries to deliver.
Yes.
So Larry gets from Jeff what I would say is the most incriminating email in the history of the world.
Yeah.
Like, what is this dumb? Yeah. Right? He writes to him, subject, swan killing. Yeah. I am this. We should confess and get this over with. We're going to get caught. I know it.
Yeah. He needs like every element of the crime.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, on such and such day, at such and such time.
Yeah. And by the way,
he's like writing the police report to save the cops time.
And the moment Larry takes his BlackBerry out and shows that screen, you know that screen is going to be seen by someone for whom it's not supposed to be seen. Like, there's no lock, but I'm saying, like, when you're watching it, that's immediately what you assume is exactly what's going to happen.
Oh, for sure, because that's right. They wrote, this is like the Chekhov's email of all Chekhov's email.
But that's why, but then they actually do the misdirection.
I had forgotten, even on this most recent rewatch, that it gets misdirected.
Yeah. By the way, of course, in real life, there'd be a lock screen, of course, but anyway.
Yeah, so of course, you know, the memorial service starts and they're talking about Norm, and Larry's phone goes off once again, and Mr. Takahashi is like, assumes it's Larry because it is Larry, but Larry somehow is able quick enough to like get it off and then like try to put the blame on some other guy. So seems like he at least dodged, they couldn't catch him red-handed this time.
Well, he just chucks it.
Right, but like you would still think that like someone would have seen that is my point.
Yeah.
So Larry goes over to Norm's widow and she's like, why are you even here? You killed him. And he's like, I didn't kill him. And actually, I have a theory. I think he was attacked by the swan. He was very much alive at the time Norm had the heart attack and at that pond with Norm.
Yeah. Okay. I think he was attacked by the black swan.
The swan is dead, Larry.
He's dead now. He was very much alive at the time Norm had the heart attack. And at that pond with Norm, here, the two of them, over here. I had nothing to do with it. I'm on my way to the locker room. I'm here. I'm over here. Here's Norm and the swan. Here's Norm. Kyoko, the crazy black swan. Norm, heart attack. Down. That's what happened. That's why Norm
died. Doesn't explain Kyoko's disappearance.
That swan was a menace. They should have put that swan away a long time ago. I don't know who killed that black swan. But whoever did it was a hero.
I love how he's like trying to serve dual interests here, where he's like, he wants to put it on, like put this narrative out, but also he wants to plant the seed that if it turns out that he gets caught with having killed the swan, he's heroic. Also the hero.
Yes, of course.
But just in case. So as he walks away, the waiter comes over. He's like, hey, I found your BlackBerry over there. And like, it's just like, it's a really great device. Like, I noticed how easy it is to just like scroll through emails and read them all. And Larry's like,
which apparently he's saying just totally randomly, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really what people said about the BlackBerry. Cool. Good for scrolling emails.
Yeah,
maybe they did actually.
As we'll see in the next scene, as Chester said, the waiter comes over and he's like, hey, here's, you know, as you know, there's 18% gratuities included. And there's also, you can give an additional tip. And they're like, yep, it's a shakedown. So Larry writes down $500, figures to buy this guy silence. And as he hands it to him, he's like, and I hope that we can keep this to ourselves, just like everything else. And as he walks away, Funkman so eloquently puts it, that waiter has no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So basically Larry just gave this guy, and now he's gonna have to give this guy $500 all the time.
Do you have to do it all the time? I don't think you've set a precedent forever.
Yeah, I guess not. I guess you could just do it once. I don't know. People have high demands once you start giving them things that we see from Andy. Okay, so for our final clip, we head into our final scene of the episode. We are at Norm's funeral the next day.
The heart attack right by the pond. It was the swan. Think about it. It's a theory. Anyway, it was a lovely service. I'll see you.
I have to push this on everyone.
Larry, I'd like to talk to you.
Yes, Mr. Takahashi?
I heard about your big additional tip to waiter. Such generosity. You know, most of the people, they don't give additional tip. Now I know, a man so generous could not have killed my black swan, my Kyoko.
Of course I didn't kill Kyoko. I was trying to tell you that.
You forgive me?
Okay. I'll forgive you.
Thank you.
You lost a little face.
A lot of face.
Got your face back?
Yes. Oh, you going to the car?
Actually, I'm going to see my mother's gravestone, but it's on the way to the parking lot.
We walked together.
Let's walk together. Yeah. After you, sir.
Thank you.
I have a couple of things I wanted to discuss with you, actually. Yeah. Let's get rid of that additional tip in the dining room. Nobody wants to sit and do math after they eat to figure out.
Oh, no math.
An additional tip.
No. Yeah.
Make it a 20% flat. Make it 25%.
Yes, 25.
25?
Yes.
Huh?
Good,
you like
good.
That?
I love it.
Okay, Mr. Takahashi.
He's wearing the hat, of course.
That's
the stonemason.
All right, you take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
And we look over at this tombstone, and it says, Mother of Larry, an asshole, and swan.
So Takahashi obviously sees the what the stonemason has done, but doesn't Larry have, like, plausible deniability here, right? Like, even if Larry had killed the black swan, why would Takahashi think that Ed the Stonemason would know that information? It's like very strange.
It just must mean that, like, word has gotten around. Like, people, if he thinks it's Larry, and other people also think it's Larry.
Mr. Takahashi has established himself as a very trusting and forgiving guy in this episode. And I feel like Larry can say, listen, this guy hates me for other reasons because of Derek Jeter. And he heard there was a dead swan at the club and he's just trying to pin it on me. He's spreading rumors.
Like, other people independent from me, based on their separate information, have also concluded that Larry David is the swan killer.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to trust my initial instinct now.
So presumably that's another club that Larry's kicked out of. What's your rating for this episode?
Mine?
I'm going to give this the full five pretties. Pretty good. I think this episode is awesome. I loved it. I laughed a ton. Two or three just, like, awesome iconic scenes. The Mr. Takahashi interrogation, the Larry, with that little soliloquy. He has two great soliloquies. He has the theory of the black swan. He has the what he's going to do to the orange hats and the blue hats. I don't remember it. Yeah. And the hoisted on hardness of the episode is done excellently. The two intersecting storylines done very well. It's a small episode, but it's, like, executed perfectly with tons of laughs. So yeah, full fives. I love this episode.
Yeah. When I was in law school, there were some professors that the way they would grade papers, final exams, would be the question would be an issue spotter, which basically means they would devise a hypothetical and then you were supposed to, like, address all the possible legal issues. And the way the teachers would grade your essay is just sort of running down the side of the page, check mark, check mark, check mark, and they count how many check marks there are. I'm looking at my notes from this episode, and, like, next to each scene, I just have a little commentary. Amazing, amazing, incredible, wow, amazing, hilarious, awesome. Like, we've had episodes with guests on where I haven't really wanted, I haven't really wanted to tell my honest ranking of the episode because I didn't want to insult the guests and make them think, I dislike this episode because of you. I may have appreciated their performance but didn't love the episode. This is not one of those episodes. This is an amazing episode. I was literally LOLing, laughing out loud throughout this episode. This is, like, a top 20 Curb episode. And by the way, I'll notice some people have it even higher. There's three rankings that list this as a top five episode ever. Ranker has this number 3 overall, right ahead of Carpool Lane, Ski Lift, and Crazy Eyes Killa, which are Hall of Fame episodes. This is a beloved episode of Curb. My only slight gripes is we get no Jerry and we get no Leon. So I'm going to take away half a pretty for each of those, but my final grade will be pretty.
Leon wasn't around then, right?
Pretty,
Leon wasn't around.
Pretty good.
At that time.
No, Leon's in this season.
He was around.
Yeah, not in this episode, however. Yeah.
No, but he wasn't a series regular at that time.
No, yeah, he was not. Yeah, he's not in all the episodes of the season.
You're docking the episode a full point because two characters that aren't generally in episodes of Curb aren't in this awesome episode of Curb?
No, but this season, we want to see Jerry.
I'm disappointed in you, Alex.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I gave it four pretties and I'm a tougher grader than Ob. So, I mean, this is in my top 15 or so. I have to check my exact grade, but
I just think that's kind of a frivolous reason. You got to give it four on its merit, give it a four on its merit. But, like, if you think it's a five star episode, dock it a point because Jerry Seinfeld's not in this episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. So
stop
I'm docking
me
a point.
Here. All right. We'll give Mr. Takahashi a chance to raise the GPA. Mr. Takahashi, Dana Lee, how many pretties do you rank this episode? How pretty good is this episode? From 1 to 5.
Pretty good.
All right. There you go. Raise the average up to 4.7.
Jeff Garland thinks this is one of the top 10 episodes.
Oh, I should add Jeff's ranking to the my.
Every time I see him, every time we go on the show, he would talk about this as Dana. I said, that Black Swan episode has got to be one of the top 10.
Yep.
So.
No, this is a great episode.
Yeah, so I'm going to do like a quick, just like little spoiler. We usually do the ratings along with the emails, but I'm tabulating them as we talk here. And based on the, we have an audience score of 3.9. So the audience is pretty high on this episode, although not as quite as high as I am. And with our five things from me and from Dana.
3.9 out of what? Yeah,
out of five. Yeah, I think it's low. Oh, I agree.
Well, our listeners are very critical.
One person was low on it. But with my five and Dana's five and Alex's four, that gives it an overall average of 4.48, which would make it to date of the 68 episodes we've seen so far, the number four ranked episode.
Wow. Up four. So
if
far.
Alex were to correctly give it the five stars that he says it, yes, that he deserves,
come on,
that
he's Alex, docking for change it, reasons, change it, Alex.
That would
change.
Move it up to 4.73, which would make it the best episode of Curb so far. According to our audience,
change it, Alex. Change score. It, Alex.
I'm not giving. I'm not giving into this,
you know,
peer pressure.
We leave it in Alex's hands.
Yeah, no. This
Alex
is,
doesn't give it. Give it
top.
Peer
this is a top four episode. That's great. It's an incredible episode.
Top four is very. Top four is very good. Yeah. Top four.
All right. Let's get to the next award. Who is the come with guy? I'll start here. Not a big surprise. But clearly, it's Mr. Takahashi. As we said, he comes to America. He builds a successful club. He lets in the Jews, the blacks, all the minorities. He's trusting. He's forgiving. But he's wise. He's a lover of animals. I mean, Mr. Takahashi is like probably in a show where everybody's like an asshole. He's probably the best person yet to be on this show. And also is in like a Hall of Fame scene in the episode. So very, very funny. And of course, it doesn't hurt that Dana comes on our podcast today. But even without that, Mr. Takahashi is a runaway come with guy for me.
Yeah, can't disagree. Not much to add. Yeah, he's just an absolute delight. Whether he's playing or whether he's playing an actor, pretending to be Dana Lee buying a car in season one. Yes. always great when Mr. Takahashi is around. And I believe we're going to see him two or three more times. But yeah, he's just an absolute blast in this episode. Just completely commands takes control over the scenes that he's in. He's like the ultimate, just like comes in, the scene, like the entire focus of those scenes. They're just unbelievable. And yeah, he's, he brought his A game to Curb and to our pod.
Yes. All right, the next question is, who is the fucking asshole in this episode?
Andy is the fucking asshole. Because
Andy?
Your cousin gave you free college. Andy. Yeah.
I was going to say, don't expect me to say anybody because I got to be back on the show. So.
Right. Yeah. We don't want you to break character.
Yeah.
I think it got to be Andy. I mean, he causes the whole thing by making his ridiculous long order. And then he's the one who blabs to his wife and, and when everybody else kept it secret. And Larry offers him free college for his daughter. And like, he's not satisfied with that and asks for more. I mean, I think he's the worst person in this episode.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to go another direction. I'm going to say Ed the Stone Mason, a real dick move, obviously, with what he does to the tombstone. But Larry had it coming. And I can't punish a man with good takes on Derek Jeter. So it's not going to be him. To me, though, I mean, Larry kills a swan. He lies about it. He maybe indirectly kills Norm. He threatens his friends and family. Sure, he offered to pay for a kid to go to college, but like that money is virtually meaningless to him. Sure, Cassie is incredibly rude and also is a terrible mother. But to me, LD himself is the biggest fucking asshole of this episode. And I got to say, this is unprecedented. This is now the third time in four episodes that I've made it LD himself.
Oh, wow. Yeah, used to get angry at me that I would do too often.
Yeah, Larry's. I got to give credit where it's due. I'm surprised that you blame Andy and not Cassie. I feel like Cassie's worse than Andy. She's the one who throws her daughter under the bus.
But Andy has also the two other things, so I think that puts him over the top.
The onions. That's true. I'm from out of town. I want to kill
a swan.
That's
the worst thing anyone does.
Yeah. Listen, it's well known that only people from in town are swan killers. Out of towners don't kill swans.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
If I ever get accused of killing a swan, I'm from Minnesota. Why would I kill a swan here in New Jersey? All right.
listen, okay, it's been great fun. I think, thank you guys for having me on. It was a pleasure. And let's do it again.
All right, awesome. Thank you so much, Dana.
Okay, yeah,
you'll be back on Curb.
We'd love to have
you
back when we get to some. Yeah, so we're really excited to see that. Do you have any idea when that season is going to start airing?
I don't even know when the first episode airing.
Okay.
I mean, I just read today that they're saying to 2021, like this fall is what they're saying.
So yeah, Jeff Garland really? Said that.
That's what Jeff Garland said. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not until this fall, huh?
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
That's what we heard on a podcast, a different podcast.
All right.
Well, thank you so much, Dana. It was
my pleasure.
Speaking to you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Have a great night.
Have a good night. Thank you. All right. Is it time for the postman?
Okay. It is time for the postman.
Postman! Postman, come here. Tell the neighborhood.
First email is from a new email sender. The postman has a letter from a new address. And the person's name is Brandon Peterson. And he says, Alex and Av, long time, first time since episode one, love the podcast. Been waiting to email in about the Black Swan, specifically since listening to you recap season two, episode one, in which you failed to mention that the car dealership customer, Dana, the one who Larry to convince GTS, guaranteed terrific safety, is in fact the same actor who'd go on to become Mr. Takahashi. Certainly a prominent role late in Late Curb. As for this episode, I'd call the Black Swan perhaps the most hateable episode of Curb of all time. As a writer, I can relate with Larry. A typo in any form, much less one that lasts for eternity, is enough to cause a rash. As a golfer, I can relate with the fellows abhorring Norm's slow golf play and finding the silver lining in his untimely demise. As a fat guy, I certainly can relate to Andy wanting his onions well caramelized and crispy. I hear that.
Well, this episode all covers all Brandon's bases.
It's amazing. Checking all his boxes. Yeah. For the come with guy, he says Funkhauser, the funk man doesn't snitch, even if of a good bribe. Yeah, he really holds position there.
Yeah.
King asshole, who else? The goddamn swan.
Whoa, wow.
Yeah, the swan does kind of initiate.
That's a little bit of victim blaming though, Brandon.
Yeah,
I think
it's he was asking for it.
Yeah. Listen, the swans and the golfers have fought for centuries. There's no way to resolve this this long-term ethnic dispute.
Yeah, you could say that like Larry should have known better than to swing the golf club, like he'll be fine. But I would argue the swan should know better than to like hoist himself at another creature and not expect to be stricken.
So, Av, have you seen that thing that's been flying around the internet the last couple of weeks? There was a 538 podcast, a politics podcast episode about it. About they polled Americans, what animal?
No.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, tell me.
There was a poll, and it said which of the following animals, like they're asking Americans, could you beat in a fight if you were unarmed?
This is awesome.
Should we do it for you? I'm going to ask you.
Yeah, please. Yeah, okay, please.
So
I love this.
Okay, so you are in a fight with this animal. Do you think you could beat this animal?
I mean, is it me or is it a regular person?
No, it's you.
Because
it's
if it's
you,
me, then none of them.
It's you, Obsidensky, okay, and you are fighting this animal in ostensibly a fight to the death. Okay, could you beat it? All right,
fight to death. Okay, so will I kill it before it kills me?
Yes, or maim it enough, that the fight's over, that it can no longer cause.
And I can run away. I can run away. I can escape.
Okay, all right. The first one I will ask you is a rat.
A rat? Yeah, I think I can handle a rat.
Okay. What about a house cat?
Yes.
Okay. What about a goose? Remember, no golf club.
Goose. Right. Yes.
Okay. So, yeah. So, and one of the other main parts of the study was how men are way more confident in their ability to beat animals than women, which is, I guess, not a surprise. Because men are, you know, overly confident about most things.
Am I wrong that I would?
I do not think you could defeat a goose. I think geese are much bigger than we realize and are much eviler than we realize. But maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. Okay.
So 61% of Americans think they could beat a goose.
Okay, but a rat and a cat, I could.
Yeah, yeah.
I could stomp on them.
I think I could beat. Well, yeah. Okay. Medium-sized dog is the next one.
No.
So I think I could take a medium-sized dog before I could take a goose. I think.
I mean, it just, I feel like the dog has just like, if it has claws and teeth, it could really do damage to me. Whereas as the goose, like all it could really do is like hit me with its beak.
It doesn't have talons? I feel
like I would eventually be able to just like get my hand. I don't know. I feel like I would just pretty, also like the neck is just like such an easy target to like disarm that goose.
That is true. Just choke it.
We're going to get super canceled with PETA for this, right? We're like,
no, that's the point of it. No, every podcast has done this. It's okay. What about the eagle? The eagle's next.
Okay, fine. Yeah, no, I don't like an eagle.
No, there's no chance.
The eagle has claws. Yeah.
No chance gets an eagle. Oh, what about a large dog?
No, I said a small dog. No.
Oh, that's true. Kava Homer. All right. Chimpanzee.
Chimpanzee, no way.
But chimps are kind of small, aren't they? I don't know. All right, the next one.
Yeah, but
The next one is
strong.
King Cobra is the next one.
Of course not.
Yeah, who are the 15% of
bite
people?
Me in 2 seconds.
Who are the 15% of people who think they're defeating a King Cobra? Who are these people? 14% think they can.
Well, it could be that it's like if you know. I wonder if like killing a snake is the type of, like, it's very scary unless like you know how to kill a snake, and that it's like not hard. Like if you know what you're doing with a snake, like it might not be. Like,
I mean, maybe like a garden snake, but a king cobra. I mean, I guess you crush its head with your foot.
Well, it's the same. I mean, if you're able to, like, but yeah, I feel like he would bite me, and then like, no, those don't wrap their head around you, right? They just bite you.
Okay, would you like to know how big a king cobra? Would you like to know how big a king cobra is?
Oh, they're very big. Yeah, like 8 feet, 10 feet.
12 to 18 feet. It's the world's longest venomous snake. You are not getting, you know, there's no human on earth who's killing a king cobra in hand-to-hand combat.
Well, maybe a 12 footer, not an 18 footer.
All right, a kangaroo, wolf, crocodile, gorilla. 8% of humans think they could beat a gorilla.
Yeah, and what about crocodile? How many say crocodile?
9%. I'm going in reduced order. Elephant, 8%.
Yeah, crocodile's hard.
8% think they can take an elephant.
What are you going to do to an elephant? You're going to punch the elephant?
It's like,
what do you think your punches are going to do to the elephant?
The only thing
you're
going to
climb
do to an
inside
elephant,
its trunk and go inside?
Yeah, is you go inside its mouth and choke it to death while you die in the process.
You have to like go up you go up the trunk.
Yeah. 8% think they could take a lion. And then
that's very stupid. Yeah,
and then 6% think grizzly bear. 6% of people. So you know, one in every 15 people you see on the street thinks that they can beat a grizzly bear to the death. So yeah, people are very very inaccurate.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of missed this whole thing.
Yeah. All right. This is according to Americans, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Email is from William Blake. He says, "Hey, Alex and Av, my name is Will, and I'm not the type of guy that kills swans. Poor Larry is targeted by Mr. Takahashi, Norm, the stonemason. The list goes on and on. Will Larry ever catch a break? Come with Guy is the swan. It met a cruel fate, but it accomplished its mission. Take out Norm." He didn't really. The fucking asshole is Norm. He broke the golf course rules of decency and then dies just to spite Larry and haunt him. What an asshole. 4 pretties out of 5. I like it. I like dubbing Norm as the fucking asshole. 4 pretties out of 5. A good consistent plot. It's out there, but not inconceivable. It is like somewhat grounded. Like, it's like a little bit over the top, but it's like unlike some of the last couple of weeks, we saw some like really outlandish plots. This is definitely more realistic.
Yeah.
Okay, we got a few more. Next up is Jared Jerome. I bet he could tell how tall a king cobra snake is just from looking at a picture of it. He says, "The Black Swan is a very tight, crisp, funny episode that reminded me of a classic Seinfeld bottle episode, like the Chinese restaurant, the parking garage, the subway, or the dealership. Sort of a correction on last week's wild and crazy episode. It's nice that the show has the versatility to pull off both ends of the ambition spectrum and succeed regardless." For Seinfeld connections, he says, "I really struggled to find the Seinfeld connections in this episode, and it had the overarching bottle episode, a couple of direct actual references to Seinfeld, the Jeter appearance, the discussion of the Tate reunion show, but had very little way of repeated plot devices. One that stood out to me was when Andy asked if Jerry would agree to wear his wife's hat as a promotion, much like when Kramer's low-talking girlfriend asked Jerry to wear her puffy shirt on the Today Show. Remembering that, Larry was not keen on the idea."
Alex, of course, called that earlier as well. For the Come With Guy, Jeff, as usual, has Larry's back, not tattling on him about the Black Swan, self-defense, foul slaughter. Although he does write a very incriminating email that will certainly come up in Larry's murder trial, should it come to that.
Yeah.
Funk is tempted by Takahashi's advances, but holds firm and not ratting out his best friend who hates him, Larry. And Larry makes a nice gesture offering to pay for Andy's kid's tuition. But I think we can all agree that the come with guy of this episode, the MVP of the show to this point, was one Stonemason Ed, who deftly pointed out how overrated Derek Jeter is and even specifically cited his poor defense as the main reason he was so overrated. Mm. Now, it just so happens that this episode aired on November 1st, 2009, meaning it was likely filmed during the 2009 season. And that happened to somehow be Jeter's best defensive season via Baseball Reference War and his third best season overall, according to B-War. B-War, they both says B-War. B-War isn't B-War Baseball Reference?
Yeah, yeah. The first one is his defensive war. The second one is his
overall his best. War. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Sorry, his best defensive and third best overall season. Yeah. Got it. So maybe should we go through all of Derek Jeter's seasons and say if he's a Hall of Famer in the Mike and Chris method? Oh, you're not from here.
I'm familiar with it though, but yeah.
Hall of Famer. That's a Hall of Famer. He got six Hall of Famers. Six Hall of Famers. Seven Hall of Famers. they would do that. They would count how many Hall of Fame years. Like that's how you. Yeah. Whatever. So he says, so maybe the timing wasn't perfect from Ed, but he stood firm on his Jeter stance, earning him clear come with guy honors. Yeah, I mean, like, you don't have to update that take, like, every year just because, like, Jeter has, like, one good defensive season. Like, Ed is still good with his correct Jeter take.
Yeah.
For the
Jared hurt defense is just like me.
Yeah, yeah. Unlike the transcript.
Yeah. And the captions.
Obviously slow Norm to the T. Jeff orders a fruit plate, for God's sake. Jeff, a fruit plate. His sweet-ass time for his stupid onions, causing a ruined day and eventually an involuntary manslaughter. Next, even after this travesty, Larry, out of the clear blue sky, offers to pay for his daughter's college tuition. So a $100,000 gift for no apparent reason. Within a day, he's asking Larry to now pay for his delusional wife's tuition as well. What chutzpah? And to put an onion on top of this shit Sunday, he broke the pact with his boys and told his wife about the dead swan. We all know Andy as the annoying but fun-loving, well-meaning loser cousin of Larry. And it hurts to slap the asshole of the week tag on him. But for this, there can be no debate. Andy is our asshole of the week. Great email. Love the write-up by Andy. Yeah, I'm with you. Andy is the asshole of the week, in my opinion, as well. For his ranking, he said, as I said, the episode wasn't overly complicated. It didn't tie together a million disparate storylines, but it was tight and well done with funny dialogue between Funk and Larry. When Larry kept throwing in curse words when telling him to keep his voice down about the swan, the repartee between the guys about manslaughter versus murder in the lockers, classic locker room talk. Very good. The tip stuff. The Takahashi interrogation and on, funny, enjoyable, but with a ceiling. This episode was pretty, 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 pretty good. That's four pretties, one no pretty, placing it 21st out of the 67 episodes so far. A top third episode and a solid way to pass time, until we get to the actual Seinfeld reunion about which we have really been duped in this season's previews. Anyway, good job all, and choke on an onion, Andy. Hmm.
So who's the listener who gives it the low rating?
We'll get there. Ah. Next up, we have two to go. Next up is in our second to last spot, as always, is Zach Brooks, who says, years ago, I had a goose violently hiss at me when I ran past it. Passed it or passed it? I passed, yeah. And it was terrifying. I understand Larry in this episode, and Larry is pro, including tip, which is also good on him. Yeah, I agree. Like, just like I know there's some restaurants have already started doing this more and more as just like, just pay the waiters more, and like, or include it, like, figure it out. Like, don't make this like weird in between situation where like the patrons of the restaurant are supposed to compensate your employees. It doesn't make any sense. No other business works this way. Yeah. Unfortunately, Larry is still the fucking asshole.
All service industries work that way, but none are as extreme as restaurants.
Fair enough. Fine.
Yeah. You get a haircut. You know, you get a massage.
Unfortunately,
what do people do?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that's true. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. It just, you know, pay people a living wage, and then you don't have to have your customers pay them. Unfortunately, Larry is still the fucking asshole of the week. It's really not at all hard to keep your phone on vibrate at all times. Plus, yeah. He killed a guy. Mm. 2 pretties out of 5.
So
we have our culprit.
Zach Brooks hissing at geese and denigrating this episode.
It was Zach Brooks on the 12th hole with the golf club, destroying the Black Swan's hopes for being the number one episode.
Listen,
also tested.
I it's a great episode, and I don't think you're a man. Number one overall. No, number four is good. Take number four.
Yeah. You're a man of principle. We understand.
Okay. Tim Collin got mad at me for that.
And finally, yes. Final. And Katie Huffman as well.
Oh yes. Oh yeah. You guys really bullied me on that.
She bullied you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I think I caved last on the podcast, but then I went and updated the document afterwards.
You did. I see that in our spreadsheet that you have it. What episode was that? 4.10?
Yeah, it was the season finale. Okay.
Oh, it's number 3. Yeah. You gave it a 4.5. Yeah. Me and her gave it 5s. Audience gave it a 4.17.
Oh.
So that's currently number 2. Well, Crazy Eyes Killer number 1. Ski Lift number 4.
Survivor?
Sorry, Ski Lift number 3. Survivor number 4.
I thought this episode's number 4 now.
Yeah, wait. So it might not be... What's going on? Oh, yeah. Have to resort. Sorry. Wait, 1 second. Let me resort. Before we get to Olin, let's do our...
Listen, I have credibility in the chart world, Alf.
I got it. I didn't sort. Okay. Okay. Yeah. So we have some... I mean, we use round numbers, so that unfortunately results in... some ties in places because numbers available. If we did 4.3s and 4.6s, then it would be cleaner. But it is what it is. Yeah. So number 1 is Crazy Eyes Killer. Tied for number 2 is Opening Night and The Ski Lift, both with 4.67s out of 5. Number 4 is now The Black Swan. Number 5, The Survivor. Number 6, Trick or Treat. Number 7, Thor. Tied for number 7 is Thor and the Carpool Lane. For 7 and 8, and then number 9 is The Baptism, and number 10 The Anonymous Donor. So that is our top 10 as of now. We have been the last few episodes, and we will continue to include a link to the spreadsheet where you can see the rankings for all the episodes. That'll be the bottom link in the show notes. So feel free to check out the entire list if you're interested, but that's the top 10. And now we close out, as always, with Olin Allen. He says, a great episode. Felt like a real buddy episode with our central group of 4 getting up to all sorts at the golf club. That was a beautiful location and conveniently right next to the Jewish graveyard. The musical score was also very notable throughout. Not sure if it was just me. The usual stings, such as the Western theme with the eye stare out, but also with the swan attackers. Writing this as a while after watching. Rating 4.5, making it 16th overall, ahead of the Korean bookie and behind the therapists. Come with Guy, gotta give it to Marty, some great lines, stuck up with Larry despite strong incentives, fully showing the hard-ass attitude combined with a commitment to his best friends. And for fucking asshole of the week, 2 strong contenders. But in memory of his passing, I will give it to the despicably slow playing Norm, who won't even let you play through. Also seems to be interfering with the rough immediately behind the ball when he strikes it, which should see him docked more. May he rest in peace.
But not really. He was a prick.
He was a slow player.
Norm and the Black Swan both get murdered in this episode and both get called a fucking asshole by listeners. So
I would say Larry is, I would say with the Swan, it's, sorry, with Norm, we said it's involuntary manslaughter. Swan, I think, is more like voluntary manslaughter.
Well, no, Swan, it's self-defense.
He's going to argue self-defense. Oh, some might argue voluntary manslaughter. He wasn't really in threat. He certainly didn't go out intending to kill a swan that day.
Do golf courses have stand your ground rules?
It's important to know.
Yeah.
Is there a right to own a golf club in the state of California in their California constitution?
Yeah, right. Perhaps. Right to bear a 5-wood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't see why not.
All right. So Olin has wrapped us up, right?
We are wrapped. We're wrapped on the postman. Postman. Right. Postman. Good night.
So
postman.
Next week, as you mentioned earlier, we have Officer Krupke. Fuck you. Larry will try hard to cover Jeff's actions after Susie finds lingerie in his car's glove compartment. So I guess Jeff told Susie he was going golfing again next week. And Cheryl's friend will compete against her for a role in the Seinfeld reunion. Cheryl David's been getting...
let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Have you seen West Side Story?
I think so, but I barely remember. I mean, I know I have because I have images of it in my head, unless I've just seen clips. So it's possible.
Right. Yeah. Well, I have never seen West Side Story.
Oh, okay.
I've never seen it.
So isn't that on your rewatch also?
So, yeah. So should we watch?
I'm trying to think. I didn't see the Broadway show, but I definitely. What did I see? I saw something West Side Story. I don't know.
Spielberg is releasing a remake this year.
A movie, you're saying?
Yeah, a movie, a West Side Story.
I need to see it just to see if I've seen it or not. You know what I mean? Do you do that with movies ever? Well, I think you're more serious with movies than I am.
I definitely have done it in my life. I think I'm pretty good. I mean, I have very careful records at this point. A lot of that was constructed from memory, which I spent a lot of time basically going through like the list of every movie released every year.
Yeah.
And of course, like some of them are like, I think I saw that. Like, I can't tell you like where I did, but like, I read plot summaries and be like, oh, does this sound familiar? Like, if it was like, no, I definitely did not see this movie, then I crossed it off.
But the problem with like West Side Story,
I think my list, I would guess, is probably like 98% accurate.
The problem with West Side Story is it's so familiar to you that even if you hadn't seen it, you would like read it and think you had.
Yeah. I mean, it's also Romeo and Juliet. So it's like, even if you haven't seen West Side Story, you know the story from like other pop culture, as you just said, whether it's even like, even if you don't realize you've been seeing West Side Story references, like you know Romeo and Juliet references, and it's like the same thing.
Yeah. All right. So we'll be doing that next week.
So yeah. So, all right. I think I'm going to watch West Side Story this week because I've never seen it and as good a reason as any.
All right. What about Bridge on the River Kwai? I hear that that's...
So if you want to send in, I'll watch that. Maybe I'll watch that the week after. But yeah, so, you know, if you have a commentary on West Side Story as well, you want to share some thoughts on that too, go ahead. Because I think I'm going to try to watch that this week. But then maybe I won't, and then you'll feel stupid sending in the comments. But I'm going to try to.
All right, Av. Yeah, well, listen, both of these movies won Oscars, so I would have to bet that they are. Pretty, 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 pretty.